This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Final hour of Bob, Groz, and Tom. A reminder, don't forget you can win a pair of Seahawks season tickets by participating in 6 Degrees of Danny David Moore. They've compiled a list of 100 celebrities they want to interview on their show. And if you convince one of those celebrities to call in, you could win tickets to every Seahawks home game this season. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. So that's what's happening in the afternoon. Meanwhile, we're going to go around the NFL in just a moment. But, man, people go crazy on the macaroni and cheese conversation and the preheating.
Well, it just reminds me again of my greatest frustration of not thinking up the Food Network. How could you not have thought of that? Hey, here's something that everyone's interested in. Food.
Yeah, they've got.
I bet we could do some shows on that people would watch because it's about food.
They've got definite opinions too.
Absolutely.
How about this one? 425. Preheating is for pansies. 360. If you're looking, you're not cooking. Another one just says flat out, no wrong way to eat mac and cheese. Just get after it.
That's good too.
Cooking is like shamanism. That's a personal adventure every time.
Shamanism, wow.
Oven advice, unless you're doing baking that requires precision, it doesn't matter. Throw it in while preheating.
Now, having said that, I believe in preheating. I don't ever throw it in before the oven's heated up.
I don't think I do. Anytime I've cooked tater tots, I just wait till it's there.
Well, I actually cook a little bit more than tater tots, but I do wait.
I'm a little limited in my culinary
skills. I'm a little
limited
too, but I mean, I got to follow a recipe. Okay. I'm not a good enough cook to cook without recipes, so I usually stick to the recipe, and if it says preheat, I preheat.
Yeah, I'm a stickler for that.
But otherwise, I mean, you can do it. Like, now, when I'm making tater tots or fries, I'm doing it by look.
When they start browning?
Yeah, okay. They're ready.
Yeah. We're not cavemen. Preheating is essential to the right amount of baking, says the 509.
Passion.
I love it. Oh, it's so good. It is so good. All right. So appreciate the passion on the preheating and the mac and cheese. Real men don't preheat, says the 509. The government is the ones that tell us to preheat. Down with the man. That's great. All right, you want to go around the NFL?
But we do it so well.
All right, let's do that. Well, Todd Gurley, you know Todd Gurley of those L.A. Rams.
Boy, he was in a bright red suit last night at the ESPYs.
Oh, was he? Was he presenting as well or winning? What was he doing?
He was nominated. I don't believe he presented. He might have presented. But I know he was nominated.
Well, he apparently is happy about the apparent decline of the Seahawks. His quote, hey, you know, we're happy about it. We have to take advantage of the situation while we can. Those guys have been beating up on us for a while now. It's definitely time for us to come in and try to take over this division and try to be back-to-back champs. It's not going to be easy. Everyone in your division knows you as well as you do. You just have to come and try to take over that division.
Okay.
How dare he try to win the division? Who does he think he is?
I think he's Todd Gurley.
I think you're setting goals.
Beat the Seahawks by 5 touchdowns in Seattle the last time they played him.
Was it that bad? I may have blocked that out.
42-7, man.
I may have blacked out in that game.
42-7. By the way, I was watching again on the ESPYs last night. I came to a realization about Aaron Donald. They're interviewing him and Gurley. Someone on the pre-show. I actually did watch some of the red carpet.
What are you? Who are you?
I don't know.
This
I don't
is
know what
so
happened.
Un-Groz-like.
Well, there was really nothing on.
Well, you're right about that.
There was nothing else on. I happened to be home. I'm like, well.
Don't you have a full DVR?
There's many, many other things I could have watched. I felt like texting Wassel and saying, I'm actually watching the red carpet.
Wow.
But I just watched 5-10 minutes of it.
It's very un-you.
But I saw Aaron Donald and Todd Gurley doing one of those pre-show. It wasn't in the red carpet. It was already in the studio interviews. And Gurley was talking about this and that. He's, you know, what he seems to be. Kind of a colorful character.
Okay.
A colorful character.
He is what he seems
to
be.
He's wearing a bright red suit, a bright red jumpsuit it looked like, you know, a colorful character. Aaron Donald, you know, because Aaron Donald, we were talking about him yesterday in terms of how's he feeling about other guys getting signed and everything
Brandon
like that.
Brandon Cook's getting a 5-year deal. He hasn't even played a game for the Rams.
I got a vibe off him that was so powerful that I went back and rewatched the segment to see if I felt it. He reminded me of Walter Jones of the Seahawks during Walter Jones's period. Walter Jones, until he signed a long-term contract with the Seahawks, was, I think, franchise tagged. I'm just guessing here. I'm going to say at least three times.
And he would always skip training camp.
He would skip training camp.
He's out there pushing semis around.
Rolling big rocks, things like that. He'd come in with about 2 weeks left in training camp and be an all-pro. And just the way, and look, I mean, Walter Jones was a country guy from Alabama, small-town guy from Alabama. And Aaron Donald is from Pittsburgh and a big city guy from Pittsburgh and played for the University of Pittsburgh. But he struck me exactly the same as Walter Jones did.
Just really, his demeanor?
His demeanor, soft-spoken about stuff. I got a vibe off him that, you know, he may not be happy with how his contract thing is going, but it's not going to impact how he plays whatsoever. I guess that's what I'm trying to drive at was my takeaway of it. Just from watching Walter Jones over the years do the same thing in interviews, he was fairly soft-spoken. I know
he didn't talk much back in the day.
He's getting into the media now, and he's talking a whole lot more, but he didn't talk much in the day. And Donald just gave me the exact same vibe for some reason last night.
Hmm.
So that it doesn't strike me that he's a guy, like, for example, we're wondering about Earl Thomas, and geez, will he play the same way if he's really unhappy
right.
with his contract? The vibe I take away from Aaron Donald is they don't have to worry about him.
Bummer.
Yeah.
I would like it to impact his play.
I just did not get a sense of, nothing but just a, and I don't think I've ever heard him, you ever heard him talk before?
I have when they did the what's the HBO show we watch?
Hard Knocks?
Yes, thank you.
On Hard Knocks?
Yeah.
I don't remember him on Hard Knocks.
He wasn't talking all the time. I've heard him speak before. But, yeah, he's not a real present individual in the media doing a ton of interviews.
Yeah, he just struck me as kind of a simple guy who's not maybe not happy, but you're not going to know. And just plays hard.
I prefer he's unhappy, disjointed.
I was looking for any sign of that. And there was no sign of it. Anyway.
All right. Well,
That was my takeaway from watching all the.
It is odd that the way they've prioritized things, and maybe there's just much more to his deal. Maybe they're further apart and they're trying to work it out. But the idea that they just signed a wide receiver that has yet to play a game for him, has not stepped onto the field in a Rams uniform, was just given a 5-year extension by the Rams for $80 million.
Well, they must be ready to do it, or they must just not be worried about it. They must trust him in terms of how he plays, and
yeah.
Figures, well, we'll just tag him.
Moving on, Julio Jones will not receive a new deal from the Falcons. He's still got 3 years left on his deal.
Sounds familiar.
Now, there could be some discord there.
Now, there wouldn't surprise me if there's some discord.
And I remember when this first came up that I was sort of surprised it was becoming an issue with 3 years left. Generally, I still have a year left, want to get some security, want to get this thing extended. You know, I'm in the final year. I want to get it set. 3 years left?
I'm not surprised when any NFL player does it now just because of what they're – I'm telling you, this is those guys looking and seeing what other guys are making and saying, I'm not even close to that. I don't care how many years I got left on my deal. This is ridiculous. They can cut me whenever they want.
I would love to ask Clayton, and I think I know the answer to this, but is there anything prohibiting a team – and I understand the salary cap implications and it could create issues, but – prohibiting an agent and a team from getting together and saying, this is an elite player at this position. Let's build in an escalator in his contract that says he's always within the top five.
I think have got clauses like that.
So that way you're not in this position of, all right, I'm holding out. I know I got 3 years left, but my contract is so outdated. I'm now the eight. I don't know where he ranks, but why not have something in there that says, if I'm producing, I keep producing at a top five level or top three, whatever number, you pay me as a top five or a top three at this position.
Why? Why do it, though, if you're the team and you don't have to?
Because you avoid these things.
But who, you know, what are these things? I mean, do they really wreck you? I mean, unless the guy actually, no, guys don't normally hold out. Guys won't normally do that.
Wouldn't you avoid the whole restructuring and brand new deal where you could just say, all right, you're now,
but let's say,
you're the fourth, now you're the third.
I'll keep playing devil's advocate. Let's say you got a year where you lose a couple of guys to retirement or injury and you got to go out and get free agents, but you can't because this guy's got an escalator in his contract.
It doesn't
pick up the cap money.
Well, it doesn't preclude you from renegotiating and saying, hey, which they do with everybody, right? We know it with Tom Brady. They still get their money. They get a big chunk as a bonus up front, but they get salary cap relief. So,
well, we'll ask Clayton about it tomorrow.
Yeah, I feel like there's should be a way to write into the contract. When you're talking about an elite player, and if he's saying, I'm putting up top five stats as a receiver every year, yet I'm being paid as the eighth highest paid receiver, whatever.
Is
I should
that
always
the truth
be
with Julio Jones?
I'm not sure where he ranks in terms of where he's paid. But if you're just a natural escalator, if your stats line up with that, you're saying, hey, man, look at my numbers. I'm still top three. I'm top five, whatever number you want to throw on it, but I'm not being paid as that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe maybe Clayton's got an obvious answer. I understand the intricacies of the salary cap. That could be problematic. But, man, people are saying Todd Gurley preheats. Aaron Donald doesn't preheat. all right. Darrelle Revis announces his retirement from the NFL after 11 seasons.
No more Revis Island.
The island has been vacated.
11 years, 8 years as a Pro Bowl player.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes. Eventually.
I would think so, but...
Why wouldn't he be?
I don't know, because we always talk about the vagaries of the NFL Football Hall of Fame. There aren't these hard and fast numbers that you look at and say, oh, they've got that number, they're in.
That's true, but, I mean, I would say the elite player or one of the top two players at his position for a decade, that usually qualifies you for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I look at him and say, yeah, Hall of Famer, but I could see somebody... making a case, well, no, actually, he hasn't done this, that, or the other. Or what? I don't know what that is. He was a dominant player at his position for almost a decade.
Yeah, I think that's an automatic. He's a Hall of Famer.
Does it feel like his decline was pretty rapid, though?
Precipitous?
Precipitous drop, and yes.
Yeah, I think that's
a good one.
Which is normally the case with NFL guys. They're good,
usually
and then suddenly
backs.
They're not.
Usually it's the guys that take all the hits, the wear and tear, the tread on the tires gets thin. Cornerback, it feels weird that it's that quick.
Hmm.
But he did suffer injuries. He came back from them, bet on himself.
That had something to do with it, right?
But, yeah, usually you see that with running backs where they just fall off the cliff. So he's calling it a career. Meanwhile, the Ravens and Bears have already reported to training camp. They're playing in the Hall of Fame game. So training camp is already underway in cities.
Bummer. In Baltimore and Chicago, too, where it's hot and humid.
Oh. Tell you what.
Chicago, what a disaster franchise that is.
Isn't that crazy? In such a massive football crazy town like that, too, that it can be that bad?
Think about it. Think about even with that little spurt in the 80s.
Well, I was there when they went to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman.
I was going to say had the one little spurt. That wasn't a 6-7 year run of greatness.
No, but they.
It was a quick pop.
Got to the Super Bowl, and that happened to be when I was living there, and the town was going berserk.
Of course. I mean, they've had a few good years over the last 50 years, it seems. Anyway, so they're playing in Canton when T.O. was at the ESPYs last night.
Was he really?
And they interviewed him.
How did he come across?
Measured.
Hmm.
Mature.
Really?
Yeah, he came across as well as he possibly could have. Didn't change my opinion of him or opinion of the thing or anything, but he did not come across as loony or crazy or anything.
As a petulant child?
Not at all.
All right. Well, good for him. Good for him. NFL.com apparently ranks the Seahawks secondary as the 7th thinnest position group in the league.
Fair, especially without Earl Thomas.
It's definitely unproven. We'll see how thin it actually is. Maybe somebody's going to step up and be a stud. There'll be another Richard Sherman that you don't have expectations attached to, and all of a sudden, wow, guy's really good.
Maybe there won't.
Why do you got to go dark on me?
But I'm saying the justification for doing it is... I mean, this is why I have less confidence in the Seahawks. Everything you're saying is possible, but it's the first time I've ever been asking those questions on almost most spots on the field. Maybe guys will step up there. Maybe the new defensive line guys are going to be excellent. Maybe the offensive line is going to be solid. Maybe Rashad Penny is going to be a stud running back. Maybe Amari Darbo is going to be a good wide receiver. Maybe not. But there's a lot of maybes as opposed to having kind of a sense of certainty. I mean, that's why... they're getting picked by so many people to do badly, is they were a sure bet for a long time. Now you just don't know.
Man, speaking of islands, I feel like I'm on an island saying this is going to be a double-digit win team.
No, you're not. You got other guys around here feeling the same thing.
Who? Is there somebody else?
I feel like everybody's saying
8-8, maybe 9-7.
I bet you Dave Wyman feels like they're a double-digit winning team.
We'll ask him.
All right.
Curtis, you think double-digit wins for the Seahawks?
No.
How dare you? That's not fresh water.
It's not, but
that's salt water, man. Yeah.
That is salt. That's
salty
water.
Taffy.
That's salty water right there.
Yeah, it is.
That's not fresh water. All right. The Cardinals GM that we read about for all the wrong reasons, Steve Keim, jailed for 48 hours, suspended 5 weeks, and fined $200,000 for extreme DUI. Blew a .19.
That's extreme DUI?
Yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
Why, does that sound light?
It does.
0.19? The law is 0.08.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you my opinion based on personal experience.
Well, That one cost him.
Well, anyway, that's what it is. Yeah, is he going to lose his job too?
Doesn't sound like it. I mean, he's suspended for 5 weeks and he's losing a big fat chunk of money, but I'm guessing he'll keep his job. We talked about this yesterday or Tuesday with El Hombre. Titans, Jarrell Casey says he's going to go ahead and keep protesting.
Yep.
He said, go ahead and find me. I can appreciate it. I mean, you've got that conviction. You understand what comes with it. The negativity, the blowback, the fine. You're still, you've got that much belief in your cause.
Is he a lock to make that team?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Within the last couple of minutes, the AP is reporting that the Miami Dolphins will enforce a new team policy called the Proper Anthem Conduct. And in that, players who protest on the field during the national anthem could be suspended up to 4 games and be hit with a fine or have a fine and suspension.
I'd love to see the Dolphins as a team do it.
You going to suspend everybody?
Yeah, you going to suspend everybody?
We're forfeiting the next 4 weeks.
Are you going to do Dolphins?
Wow. So they said protest on the field. So they're saying they still have the option, I guess, technically, to stand in the locker room.
Oh, yeah. That's the new NFL policy.
Yeah.
They can't suspend them for that.
So they come out and take a knee. Interesting.
Indeed.
Well, we'll see. The Titans have a guy that's already said he's going to do it, and I'm going to guess he's not going to be alone in this league. He's the first one I've heard vocalize it.
But I would think so, but yeah, I haven't heard anyone else today.
Meanwhile, in Pittsburgh, Le'Veon Bell will likely skip Steelers training camp in a stunning move. Upset with his, what, $14.5 million tag?
It's insulting.
I'm so angry about my $14.5 million guaranteed. I'm not showing up. How dare you?
You insult me.
Please, somebody insult me that way one day, please. I'll take it with a smile.
No kidding.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about living in an alternate reality. I understand their shelf life is very, very short, and they're trying to make as much and really capitalize on their time there. But
you can verbalize things a little bit better.
That's lifetime money right there. $14.5 million?
Yep.
I think I could stretch that out.
You could verbalize things. Well, it depends on how many guys, family members you got clawing at you for money.
Fair point. But still, I don't know what he's made up to this point, but it's not, you know, he's not been poor up to this point either. He's made a nice chunk of money.
Well, he's making a nice chunk of money for his owners.
Man. All right. So he's not going to be there. Meanwhile, Cowboys defensive end Randy Gregory has been conditionally reinstated to the NFL after 18 months for repeated violations of the league's substance abuse policy.
Yeah, there they go.
Your Cowboys.
Not mine.
Your Cowboys.
Not mine.
How about that? Somebody saying $14.5 million is not lifetime money at all. I don't know what you're buying out there.
If you live to 180, yeah. But, I mean...
Yeah, and that's my plan.
If you're an individual by yourself, certainly it is. For guys clawing at you for medical expenses for playing football, I mean, maybe it's not. The point is, you're making billions. The NFL is a league that makes billions of dollars. I just said, like I said, he could have verbalized it better than saying he's insulted.
Yeah, it's he was talking about retiring at one point because of it.
Yeah, that,
get out of here.
Like I said, you could definitely verbalize it better.
253 says, Graz's shelf life is short too, but he doesn't hold out. It's kind of cold, man.
It's funny, though.
Funny, but little cutting.
I'll take funny.
And then this is one element of the ESPYs I did hear, and that was the speech from Jim Kelly.
Yeah, it was intense.
I didn't realize his speech was so impacted by what was going on. I hadn't heard him speak.
He's got cancer of the jaw.
Well, I knew that. And he was in remission there for a while, right?
In remission on three different occasions.
Yeah, so I hadn't heard him speak. I'd read interviews and things, but I hadn't heard him. But here's a little bit of Jim Kelly from last night.
And then when I look up here and I see Dan and I see John, I just reflect back on some of the things we've been through and some of the things we went through and all the good times, our golf tournaments that, you know, we had so much fun. Dan, you and I battling year after year, twice a year. And John, on behalf of the class of 1983, the five other quarterbacks, thank you for winning 2 Super Bowls for us. We appreciate that, especially me and Dan.
And then,
when he said that, it occurred to me that that's right.
Yeah.
Always the only one in that group that won a Super Bowl.
Won a couple to represent all.
Yeah. And then none of those other guys did.
Quick message to his daughters.
My daughter, Erin, every single time she walks into the hospital, not one time did she ever have a frown on her face. It was always, Daddy, you look so good. You are so cute. And she'd give me a hug. My daughter, Cameron, so many times she would hug me, and I didn't want to leave her go. Even today, when she hugs me, I don't want to leave her go.
Touching stuff, man. That's
It was a great speech he made last night.
I will say that they do have, as much as I'm not into the awards of the ESPYs, I don't really care about it. It's a really obviously manufactured thing by ESPN, but you do get some great moments out of that. And they were showing like the Stuart Scott speech, just different. Jimmy V.
Well, they awarded the best coaches to three coaches who were killed in a school shooting. That was pretty emotional, too. So
yes.
They do have a lot of good moments.
So as much as the actual awards and, you know, this, that, and the other, I don't really care about that. But it does create great moments like that. That's very cool.
You don't care that the greatest Olympic moment was Sean what's-his-face?
Sean White?
Yeah.
He won?
Over the curling guys.
Over the curling guys?
I was highly disappointed the curling guys lost.
You thought the curling guys got robbed.
I did.
The curling guys.
The curling guys who sat there chubby. Bearded, looking like grocery workers. I mean, they were the guys.
Listen, all due respect, congrats on your success, but if you're a curler, I can't get there with you.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry, I can't.
They won gold.
It's a novelty.
They won gold.
It's not a sport. They're not athletes.
Oh.
Now that is salt water.
That's fresh water, brother.
That is salt water taffy,
I'm
man.
I'm sorry. It is what it is. I would take Sean White over curlers.
I would have given it to the U.S. women's hockey team, which won already for the best game, I think, anyway.
I'd give it to whoever else was in the category.
The curlers were curlers. Awesome, though. They looked awesome.
All right, there you go. A little trip around the NFL. Coming up, we're going to eavesdrop on Tiger Woods. First round in the books for him at the Open. We'll talk about it and let you hear what he had to say next with Bob Gross and Tom.
It's time now for the eavesdrop.
It is the eavesdrop here with Bob Gross and Tom. We take a listen to something somebody said somewhere about stuff. Today that somebody would be Eldrick Woods. Tiger Woods.
He refers to himself as in the third person all the time.
I've heard from very, very good authority that was not him.
Yeah, is that right?
That's right.
Who's that very good? Never mind.
It's just people. Just people. Yeah. They.
Many people.
They. Many, Gross, many, many smart people
okay.
are saying he was not in charge of his account, that okay. he signs his name
okay.
when he tweets. But he had an up and down first round. Ultimately, it turned out okay, considering conditions and all that good stuff. Went even on his first round at the Open today.
He's tied for 32nd, five shots off the lead, in very good position.
Yeah, the leader is Kevin Kisner.
Yep.
At 5 under. Real who's who on that leaderboard, isn't it?
Well, it's the British Open, Bob.
Yeah.
A lot of international golfers.
Eric, well, he's an American, your leader. Eric Van Ruin is tied for second with Xander Lombard and Tony Finau at 4 under.
Tony Finau has had an amazing year. He's the guy who wrecked his ankle at the Masters and then
unbelievable.
Made the cut.
Just popped it back into place.
And then was in the final group at the U.S. Open.
Wow. So Tiger shoots even through round one. A little bit of what he had to say, talked about just being able to play the third major of the year is an accomplishment.
The course is a little bit different than what it was the last couple times we played it, so it'll be a fun challenge. But now to have the opportunity to come back to Carnoustie to play here in Scotland again, you know, I've said this before throughout this year, it's been a blessing. There were some times where I didn't think I would ever be able to do this again. And lo and behold, here I am playing my third major of the year.
It is cool that he's able to do it. It's just amazing the things you're sort of celebrating with him now, where it was just win after win after win. Now we're celebrating available after available after available, right?
Well,
just being able to play.
How are you going to remain a fan of his? Because let's be honest.
Probably
like,
always
you,
be a
you
fan.
You like the win after win after win.
Well, it's what brought me to the game of golf, yeah.
But now he's not winning.
I know, but I still hold out hope as long as he's out there.
Cast him aside.
There's nobody else I like better.
I'm a new lead pony.
Cast him aside. Kick him to the curb. There's nobody I like better.
Would be a great. He told you, one of his coaches picked him to win this week.
Hank Haney, yeah.
He's in position to do that.
I hope he does. I hope he wins every time he's out on the course. Another guy who's not an electric personality.
No.
He's really, he was never a guy who said anything interesting. It was just, he was the, you know, Mike Trout is the, you know, the Tiger Woods of baseball.
Tiger Woods made himself available to do commercials. Mike Trout doesn't do that.
Is it the commercials that really brought him over, or just the fact that he was just so different than what anybody had seen?
Well, Tiger Woods was known to people from a little age. I mean, he was on the Mike Douglas show and the Merv Griffin show hitting golf balls when he was 3 years old.
I know.
So he was like Michael Jackson. That's always been the comparison. You can't compare Tiger Woods to any other athlete, in my opinion. I mean, he's been famous before he was an adult.
Right. But in terms of who he was as a professional golfer, he was just dominant.
Yeah.
That's Mike Trout. And he was boring. Tiger's not a great interview.
Lots of
Nobody's
guys are
clamoring to hear what Tiger has to say.
Arnold Palmer was boring. Who was the greatest moneymaker of them all still.
And I agree with you, Tiger did a million commercials, but I don't know that that's why anybody said, I got to watch this guy golf. What a great commercial. He was present. Everybody knew who he was.
That's the marketing thing that Manfred was talking about.
Right.
He was putting it in the social media context.
But there's, to me, that's the similarity between the two, is that they're both extremely dominant in their sport.
Right.
And both in terms of personality, like, man, I can't wait to hear this guy talk. What's he going to say next? Or what's he going to say about this?
Well, that's
they're both
not
on the same level. Like,
there are very few Alis in our lifetime, Bob.
That's true.
You know what?
That's very true.
For the most part, guys are pretty boring. There are very few, maybe a better one is a very few Richard Shermans.
Or Charles Barkley.
Or Charles Barkley's. Those are the exception rather than the rule, it seems.
Yeah. Moving back to Tiger, he says he felt he played a good round, but thought it could have been better.
I think it played a little on the quick side out there this afternoon. The balls were definitely rolling, and I thought I played a pretty solid round, and unfortunately, I didn't take care of both par fives. I hit 8-iron to both of them and made par on both of those and had a little three wiggle there on 13. So the round certainly could have been a little bit better.
What do you call it, a three wiggle?
That's what I heard.
What is that?
Like a three putt?
I'm guessing.
Par.
Three wiggle?
I'm guessing that's what it is.
I didn't know if that was a common golf term that I hadn't heard.
Probably is, and I haven't heard it either.
A little three wiggle there, Gross. And then finally, I guess he had a sore neck going into this. So he talked about what it was like playing the round with a sore neck.
There's a hell of a lot there. My back here hurting. So yeah, I've been taped up, bandaged up, and just that you were just able to see this one. It's no big deal. It's just got to play.
He's got a totally different perspective now.
On pain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dealing with his back the way he has.
Well, he's had multiple surgeries on his back, multiple surgeries on his knees. So, a little stiff neck. He's like,
yeah, that's
please,
nothing.
I'll do this every day.
Yeah, I can do that standing on my head, no pun intended.
Seriously, though, when he's gone through what he's gone through and having the number of surgeries he's already had, the stiff neck, you're just like, come on, man.
Well, it's the back that's killed him. I mean, he actually played with the leg. He won a U.S. Open.
And it was broken.
With his leg basically busted.
Yeah. That was phenomenal.
It's his back.
And they went an extra round in that one, didn't they?
They did, with your boy Rocco Mediate.
It's awesome.
Remember Rocco?
I do.
Yeah.
Interviewed him.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Not
at that tournament, just interviewed him before.
Okay.
Was a nice guy. Really liked him. Really nice guy. But yeah, that was an epic, epic tournament. So he's a guy that, listen, I obviously the ratings tell you people still are interested in this guy.
Sure.
Extremely interested in him. I'm not the only one hoping he returns to prominence on some level because people tune in for that possibility, right? Can he ever regain?
Most definitely.
He'll never be what he was. That's never happening again. But can he win again? I still believe he can win again. Just not at, I mean, he was on such a ridiculous pace. It was, and we always talk about Vegas odds and all that, you know, all those bets of you take Tiger or the field.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people were taking Tiger in those situations, and deservedly so. That wasn't a crazy bet.
Not necessarily. It is now.
Well, sure.
But it wasn't then.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it was something that people hadn't seen, that, you know, that level of dominance, his you know, the fact that he's biracial was an element of golf you didn't really see, and he was crushing the field, so it kind of flew in the face of what was perceived to be a stodgy old, racist, exclusionary sport.
I think more than that, it was a guy who was already famous, living up to his potential. A guy that you knew about in college.
You think he exceeded his potential?
Well, yeah, sure. I
mean, exceeded what you thought he might be?
He was what you hoped he could be.
Right.
But didn't, of course he exceeded his potential. Well, he exceeded any kind of potential.
It's just, it's you. We see it in every sport. Somebody's hyped up as the next best thing ever.
Here's a guy who was hyped up as the next best thing ever from the age of five.
And exceeded it.
And was.
Yeah. And it's a rarity you see anything like it. You see guys that are good, but they're not quite what they were hyped up to be. LeBron James is another one, I will say, lived up to and exceeded what you probably thought he could do.
But LeBron, you became aware of in high school, his last 2 years of high school.
Sports Illustrated.
And then he played, then he's in the NBA in 3 years.
And he's dominant.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, he was not a guy who was in the public consciousness for a dozen years.
Right, I get it.
Before he hit it, but actually longer than that.
I'm just talking about living up to the crazy hype that is put on players as
kids. Well, that's why the hype was put on him, probably more than anyone else, and lived up to it.
It's just a rarity, though. Yep. It really is. To have somebody highly touted, they're going to be the greatest, they're going to be one of the greats, you're always kind of, okay. And they often, more often than not, come up a little bit short of that. Tiger and LeBron are two guys that, in my opinion, exceeded the ridiculous hype attached to both of them. So,
most definitely.
I'm pulling for Tiger. We'll see what happens. But currently, 5 shots off the lead after one round
that's
in the books.
That's a good spot to be in.
Yeah.
And even par. So, 500 is leading, even par is a good score.
Yeah, we'll see what happens out there at Carnoustie in Scotland. Meanwhile, we're going to come back. We're going to sum it all up next with Bob, Groz, and Tom.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app. It's time to sum it up with Bob, Groz, and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
Oh. Fuck, more macaroni and cheese.
That's,
you like that look?
Oh, it's perfect. Perfect. You guys miss out if you're not watching on the stream sometimes, I tell you what.
Sometimes. Missed us doing a lot of laughing at little dogs today and me making Bob laugh at the end of the show.
That's great. That is great.
I'm reading a piece in the Post about Jermaine Kearse.
What happened with him?
Nothing.
Oh,
in fact,
the
article's entitled "Why Jets Releasing Jermaine Kearse is a Preposterous Notion."
Preposterous? Is that something that's being floated out there that they're going to release?
Well, I guess the story is that the Jets have some depth of wide receiver. There's been some speculation. I'm reading, quoting the article now. There's some speculation the team might move on from Kearse, who has no guaranteed money left on his deal. I don't see it. To me, he's a key piece of the offense. It goes on to point out that last year, he had a great year last year. 65 receptions, 810 yards, both career highs with 5 touchdowns. Leading the team in receptions. It also goes on in the last paragraph, a shot at the Seahawks, which isn't meant as a shot at the Seahawks. The trade for Kearse, which sent defensive lineman Sheldon Richardson to Seattle, is one of Mike, I don't know how he pronounces his name, Mike McKagan? The Jets GM? Okay. One of his best moves as a GM. They acquired the second-round pick that helped them trade up in this year's draft for Darnold, but also landed Kearse, a player they desperately needed. So that's interesting. That trade, from the Jets' perspective, is paying huge dividends. From the Seahawks' perspective, Sheldon Richardson's gone.
Yeah.
It didn't lead to much of anything.
Didn't work out the way they had hoped. Even though I think he did what you thought he would do, which was come in and soak up a lot of attention from the opposition there, which would in turn you would think would open up things for the other guys on that defensive line. It didn't really pan out that way.
Saw Jermaine Kearse last week, too.
Does he live out here in the offseason?
I'm assuming he does. He went to college and everything in high school. But he looked good. The charity golf tournament.
Yeah, good for him. I root for the guy. I hope he does well.
Sure. Well, so far, so good.
Yeah. So hopefully he's not in danger of losing his job. And even if they did cut him loose, he's a guy that would find a job elsewhere.
Easily. Based on last year, would be no problem.
I did a video today for 710 ESPN, a little quick video on the Mariners as they return to business tomorrow. And you and I talked about this a bit, but I still believe, you know, there are many problems toward the end of the first half. The offense went flat.
Yep.
Right? That's going to happen. We talked about it. You're not going to have all 9 guys on fire at the same time. You just didn't. You were being shut down. Maybe fatigue's part of it. Maybe injuries are part of it. It could be a conglomeration of everything. But I thought one of the most undersold parts of their struggles was the absence of Mike Zunino. And I'm not talking about the plate. I understand who he is.
Not behind the plate.
Yeah. We're very clear on who he is and, more importantly, who he is not at the plate, which you need better, you want better, but who he is behind the plate, I think, was sorely missed. And it's not as obvious at times, right? It may be obvious when you see Freitas or Herman trying to throw somebody out, You go, wow, that ball had some arc to it, and it wasn't even close to second base.
But it's not just that.
It's not that. It's when you've got pitchers who were hitting a tough stretch. We saw a week where basically every starter you had just had a down performance except for Marco Gonzalez, right? We were talking about everybody. That's where Zunino's absolutely key. His rapport with these guys, his ability to read these guys, his ability to adjust to what pitch is working versus what pitch isn't working, his ability to frame, I think is really understated. And I think you saw the impact. I thought, you know, his absence was a good chunk of why they were struggling, in my opinion. So I am looking for, I don't know if he's ready for game one tomorrow. We'll see what goes on. But I think him coming back is going to be a boost to what we were seeing out of that rotation.
Better be.
I certainly hope so. But I think, you know, you saw guys.
When is he coming? He's the one I'm not sure when he's coming back.
I haven't seen an official. I mean, I think technically in terms of time, I think he can come back now. But I don't know. Just, I don't know physically where he's at, how he's feeling.
Yeah, I don't either.
So, I mean, Felix is back.
Right, he's pitching on Saturday.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with him. But I just think Zunino is a very, very undersold catcher when it comes defensively. And I don't know what the sabermetricians say about him. I don't care. I'm using my eyes on him. And I'm watching how this staff responds to him. And I think he's very crucial to their success.
I'm sorry Felix Hernandez won't have him back for Saturday, which I'm calling the most important start of his career for the Mariners. Felix, that's more of an indictment of the Mariners not being in many big games during the course of Felix Hernandez's career. But this may be a watershed moment for the Mariners' erstwhile ace, whose ERA is over 5 for the year, has had a very rough season, and is going out in a very soft spot after coming back from an injury, pitching against the White Sox, one of the worst teams in baseball, with the Mariners on the verge of probably acquiring some help for going down the stretch, including rumors have him connected with starting pitcher Jay Happ, amongst others. If you're going to replace a guy in that starting rotation right now, that guy is Felix Hernandez, unless he pitches better. And if he has I don't know if this one outing will make the determination, but if he goes 2/3 of an inning and gives up 5 or 6 runs, not sure how many more times you'll see him out there. So I think it's a really, really big start for Felix Hernandez on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think it's about as good a spot as he could land in to try to find rhythm again. Right?
Better be.
You're going up against a team that's just atrocious this year. And I don't know what all their problems are. I haven't watched the White Sox, so I don't.
They got one good player.
I assume when you're almost 30 games under .500, it's probably a bit of everything. So maybe they just don't hit, they don't pitch, they don't play defense. It's a team on your home field you should beat, which they have been beating. They've taken the teams like the Orioles and teams like the Royals and done what they should do with them. I don't expect any different with the Chicago White Sox. I expect them to go out and handle their business, and I expect Felix Hernandez to have a decent outing. If you don't have a decent outing against this team, I'm not sure what you expect with him versus any other team.
That's why it's a big start, man.
It is.
Why it's a big start.
I'm not on board with the biggest of his career, but it's definitely big.
What's a bigger one? The Toronto game?
They certainly could have used it on that week where, again, the rotation fell apart and he was your ace and you were looking at a playoff run, and what did he give up, 8 runs in Toronto?
Yeah.
That was bad.
That was not good.
That was bad. All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guest today, Brady Henderson, for joining us on the program. If you missed anything, all you got to do is go to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click that podcast button and scroll down and click on our picture, and everything you missed is waiting for you right there. We're back with you tomorrow right here with Bob Gross and Tom.
A role play group? What would a role play group? What would...